Hi, Halton here. For our friends at Unimac, easily train and protect your crew to NFPA 1851 standards with effective washer extractors that sanitize your PPE, simple record keeping, and proper training on how to be NFPA 1851 compliant. Unimac is called upon by fire crews everywhere to meet these needs. Get the details at unimac.com/sanitize.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fire Engineering Talk Radio and another installment of the Professional Volunteer Fire Department, the podcast dedicated to our great volunteer fire service and getting firefighters to embrace the message that developing and maintaining and portraying a professional image is the duty and responsibility of all firefighters, paid or volunteer. It is Tuesday, July 13th, a dark and stormy night here where I am in Buffalo, New York. We had some storms come through, some great lightning, and luckily the internet didn't go down. Sounds like we're up and running, which is great. It was great to see the rain. We needed it. And I just got back from a good week's R&R, so I am refreshed and ready to go and delve into some great topics tonight. So thanks for listening in. It would be so good to see you in FDIC, which is just a few short weeks away. I'm so excited to be going back to Indianapolis and, again, networking and meeting up with some old friends and making new friends, and that's the great thing about FDIC. And on Tuesday, August 3rd, I'll be doing my four-hour professional volunteer fire department presentation and would be so honored if you were able to attend that class. I'm always revising it, always tweaking it. A lot of new information I've put in there and discussions with the attendees about what it means to be a professional firefighter in a professional organization. And we're going to talk about things we can do to continue to earn that title, both individually as a department member, but also collectively as an organization. So I would love to see you in my class Tuesday, August 3rd, the Professional Volunteer Fire Department at FDIC. And if not, maybe I'll stumble into you in some of the other great classes that I'll certainly be attending, because there's so many great classes to go to, or maybe out and about networking throughout the day and into the evening. Always a great time at FDIC, and I'm so excited to be going back there. I can't believe it's only a couple of weeks away now, 3 weeks or so away, so that's going to be a fun time. Now, for this episode tonight of the Professional Volunteer Fire Department, I wanted to delve into a few different topics of importance in our volunteer fire service, and we're going to discuss one company's unique approach to bolster its staffing. They implemented what they call a ride-along program, which allows firefighters from other departments who maybe work on the in another department's they're from another department, but they work in the area of this department, so they're allowed to hop on board and ride out with them. Very interesting. Interesting concept, and I'm looking forward to talking about that, because got some questions I want to ask too, and maybe you do as well. And if anybody does have questions and would like to call in and talk to our guest, or has anything they want to add about anything affecting our volunteer fire service, feel free to call in at 760-454-8852. That number again, 760-454-8852, if anybody would like to call in. But our guest tonight has written about this program we're going to talk about, and we're going to discuss it in length, and we're going to get his opinions about it. And we're also going to get his opinions on other areas of concern and things that maybe we can do better in our volunteer fire service world. We're going to delve a little bit into leadership, which I know we talk a lot on this show about leadership, and in fact, a lot of the podcasts, not just fire service podcasts either, right, delve into the topic of leadership. Well, maybe that's because it is so important. It's a topic that certainly should be discussed over and over again, because we need to get the message out to anyone in an officer's rank, or maybe someday desires to be in an officer's rank, that they need to work hard and develop into a respected leader. They need to work hard to get the skills that yes, they make them a successful and competent firefighter, but also a successful and competent officer as well. And this is both sides of the aisle, right? Administrative as well as the line officer side as well. So our guest is going to share some examples of maybe what successful leadership looks like in a volunteer fire department. And we may even broach the controversial subject of requiring chief officers to pass some knowledge-based testing in order to serve as simply being elected or appointed from some committee without any criteria to meet at all. And finally, let's discuss some things maybe we can do to slow the bleed within our hometown volunteer fire departments. That is how we keep our members. Getting them is one thing, keeping them is another. So joining me to discuss these items is a veteran volunteer firefighter from the Catskill, New York Fire Department, and I am so pleased to welcome him on board tonight. So let's welcome Ed Dolan to the show. He is currently serving as a captain in the Catskill, New York Volunteer Fire Department, but he did serve 16 years as a chief officer. That's why I continue to call him chief, because in our area, once you've been a chief, you're considered a chief forever, and you still earn the respect of the other by getting called chief. But he's currently serving as a captain, and he has written numerous articles focusing on so many topics of very important to the volunteer fire service. Ed, welcome to the show. Glad to have you with us.
Great to be here, Tom.
So let's just talk a little bit about your background, give people a little idea where you come from and what got you involved. Did you have family in the volunteer fire service? Are you a second, third generation, or are you the first one? Tell us a little bit about your fire service journey.
Well, my great uncle, who's since passed away, used to drag me around to the firehouses in Catskill when I was a little boy in the 70s. And when I'd go over his house, we would play with model fire trucks and stuff like that, and he had fire engineering back then, and I used to look at the pictures back then, and as I got older, I still had that love and for the fire service, and I ended up moving next door to the chief of Leeds, Dave Brockway, and I was 14, 15, but he took me on every run with him. I'd ride with him in his vehicle. Learned a lot from him. And, you know, I had a couple close friends that were firefighters. So not the typical where my whole family was in it or second generation, third generation, but my great uncle was the one that really hooked me on it.
That's all it took, man. He hooked you, right?
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell us a little bit about your area. What's Catskill like? It sounds beautiful for those that don't know that region. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your first new area?
Okay, so there's the Catskill Mountains, then Catskill. A lot of people get it confused. I'm in the village of Catskill. It's a nice village. It's really transformed the last few years, and specifically the last 18 months or so with COVID. A lot of city people moving up and buying up the housing market. So our first due, it would be probably like a miniature Brooklyn. We have all the buildings you have in Brooklyn except high rises. Two, three-story flats, balloon frame. Ordinary construction. The center of our town is like a very urban area. As you move out, we have a lot of 2.5, three-story apartment houses. Years ago, they were single residences, but they've been carved up into apartments, some of them as many as 6 units. And then we have a rural area we cover, farms, industry, stuff like that.
So you run the full gamut.
Yeah, we get a little bit of everything. And we have the freeway in our district, too, New York State Thruway. So
oh, New York State Thruway is always fun, isn't it? I always said when I was chief, I don't know how you felt, but I used to tell my members I feared a line-of-duty death on the New York State Thruway more than I did any residential house fire. Not that I discount the danger of a house fire at all, but just something about those thruway calls always kept me on guard, man, or on edge.
Yes. All the companies in this area that run the thruway, they do a great job of getting out there, getting the business taken care of, and getting off as soon as they can.
And that's your paid job is with the thruway, correct, with the thruway authority?
Correct. I've been here 30 years. Started out, part-time, worked my way up, promoted to run the NIAC section that covered from Bronx City Line to Spring Valley. Learned a tremendous amount down there for my job. Then I came back to Catskill, and I oversee the maintenance operations and emergency response for this area. I'm the point person.
Very good. And now your home department there, Catskill, how many runs a year? How many members, how many runs a year, and what kind of calls you going on?
We do roughly 400 runs a year, 60-man roster, probably 40 or some kind of active, and then the other 20 are just on the roster, life members, stuff like that.
Right. Are they EMS runs too, or just fire?
Just fire, no medical. Our ambulance does about 2,500 to 3,000 calls a year. They have three paid crews during the day and two at night, I believe.
So it's a paid ambulance service.
Yep.
Okay.
So we have a chief, two assistants, captain, and two lieutenants. That's our line structure.
Gotcha. So 400 fire runs a year. Is it pretty much like the average volunteer company where you get a couple fires, good structure fires a year, and then a lot of smells and bells and alarm calls?
A lot of smells and bells. Get a few of our own structures. We go mutual aid to Hudson, Athens, West Athens. And that's where we get a lot of work over at Hudson, really. It's a condensed city. 8 square blocks, and they got a pretty big population all sitting on top of each other. So we get over there second, do it, put an engine in the tower. So we get a lot of work over there.
Hudson, is that a fire department, and their first due area is 8 blocks?
Yeah, it's about 8 or 10 blocks.
Wow.
It's a really unique city. There's parts with a lot of money, and there's parts with not so much money. They're a tremendous department. Those guys are really on top of stuff. They got to be aggressive, otherwise you have two or three buildings going if you screw around.
Is that a paid department or another Valley outfit?
All volunteer.
Wow.
Yep.
Imagine that, folks. We have people listening to the show. I know that their first due area is 50 square miles, 100 square miles. I've talked to people in New Mexico that it's just their first due area would be like me driving from Buffalo to Rochester, New York. And then this Hudson company, they got 8 square blocks. Wow. Shows that the diversity of our volunteer fire service and what we have to deal with, for sure. So it sounds like the leaders out there, and we'll get into that at leadership in a little bit, but, off topic a little bit, mutual aid, it sounds like you guys are squared away and egos have been placed aside and you guys are all working well together and no one remembers that somebody offended somebody 50 years ago, so they won't work with them anymore.
Yeah, the group of chiefs that we work with right now, I think, is the best in the last 30 years since I've been a firefighter. They all get along. They talk. Now we text messaging. Everybody texts each other. We train together a lot. Really just got to know each other over the years. And sometimes you work with people. Like when I first got in, we'd go mutual aid somewhere, but you never were friendly with guys. And it was just very different than it is nowadays. We work together. We train together. And we're in constant communication with our mutual aid partners.
Kudos to you guys for being, progressive and thinking that way. Because unfortunately, as I travel and talk to people all over, that doesn't happen all over. And there's sometimes long, long simmering disputes that have been going on far too long. And we've talked about that on the show in the past. But we need each other.
Especially the public. They lose in a situation like that.
And what does the public want? They just want help, and they want competent help, and they want it there quickly. They don't want to hear anything about, well, they offended me 20 years ago, so we don't call them. We skip this town and go to another town. No. That's not what your citizens want to hear, and that's not what professionals do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I know you've written a lot of articles, had a chance to read through many of them, and you have quite a following out there, which is kudos to you. Fantastic. That's out of respect for you. You've written a lot of different articles about the volunteer fire service, and I'm really intrigued by this ride-along program. Matter of fact, it's not just me. I've actually taken some emails from some people telling me they were looking forward to hearing about this tonight. A lot of people intrigued. We talk a lot about recruitment and retention and a lot of different ideas that are out there. So it's definitely a unique approach, right, to bolstering your ranks by getting volunteer firefighters from other departments, but they work in your area, your first due area, involved. Can you talk about it a little bit? How did this come about? Were there challenges? And how's it working out for you?
Sure. So 3 years ago, our chief McCullough, he allowed our town ambulance administrator to ride with us once in a while. He is a past member of Catskill, and he belongs to a department in Albany County now. So that kind of – that was like the seed in my head, the plant in my head. So fast forward a year and a half, 2 years, we go to like three structures in a week, and we have people from other – members from other departments that want to pitch in and help.
They heard it, so they said, oh, I'm going to go watch, right? So they
right.
We get that a lot, right? You get volunteers that they hear the fire go out and they want to go buff it, right?
Yeah, and you know that's great, but the way we operate, we ride in on the apparatus and everything is assigned out, so we all have duties. So, you know, if somebody wants to jump in or just starts grabbing stuff or the chief assigns them something to do and the officer don't know, you know, it's hard to – you know, really operate smoothly when you're interjecting people in the middle of the game, you know? So I was sitting home thinking about how we could include these members from other departments to be an asset. And I thought about, hey, Pat had, you know, George riding with us. What if we, you know, did a program like that? So I sent a message out to all the chiefs. They thought it was a good idea. Chief Holt empowered me to, you know, recruit and come up with an agenda. We recruited on Facebook. I put it out, and I think within like 24 hours, we had 11 or 12 people that wanted
no
to.
No kidding. 11 or 12?
Yeah. Yep. So
now, is your town, not to interrupt you, but is your town, is there something in your town where you have a lot of people working in your town from other areas? Is it like a hub or a big center or something? Like, that's a lot of people.
Pretty much Catskill is the county seat. So if you're doing any county business or you work for the county, you're pretty much in Catskill. A lot of car dealerships that employ a lot of guys. And it's just, you know, a lot of people in town for shopping. Walmart, Super Walmart, stuff like that. Our mountain area and the rest of the county isn't as developed as Catskill is, so we have an advantage there. So with the program, we got the names. I came up with an agenda. You know, first we thought about, well, what is the goal here? It's to improve service to the public. It's to have qualified volunteers ride in and do the job correctly, aggressively, and safely. So we met with all the prospects, went over the agenda, how we operate differently than them because we're more urban than a lot of the guys that wanted to work with us. So we went over different types of calls. We encounter a lot of gas leaks, a lot of nursing home calls, you know, a lot of mixed occupancies, connected buildings, balloon frame construction, then the throughway that a lot of these other departments don't always encounter. So we started out with 11 people. After we did the agenda that night, we took them around, showed them the equipment, went over the Mayday policy, and basically we just wanted them to feel comfortable with us because some of them didn't know us like some of the other members did. So just to break the ice with them, you know, a little networking on the floor out there. So the program kicks off. The very first run is a gas leak, and the first out engine has Catskill chauffeur, a Carroll firefighter, and a Hudson firefighter in the back, and a Hudson captain riding as the boss in the engine.
Wow.
Second due piece was the tower. It gets out, got six people on it, Catskill firefighters. So if we didn't have that program, you know, our engine and tower would have split up, you know, with smaller crews. However, very first run, we benefited and seen a benefit right away that now we're an engine and a tower getting out fully staffed and with some really good firefighters from these other departments.
And who benefits from that? The public.
Yeah. So as time went on and we got to know people a little better, we decided to let the captain of the city of Hudson chauffeur when one of our chauffeurs wasn't around. So we took him out driver training, you know, did everything we needed to do with insurance company. He was driven the city of Hudson truck, so he had a, you know, good understanding of pump operations, tower ladder, and all that stuff. So it was really quick with him. But he's driven probably 25, 30 runs since he's been a member of the ride-along program. He's also been the officer in charge on probably a half a dozen runs where no Catskill officer was on scene. He ran, you know, command, nothing serious, but, you know, we trust our program, we trust our people enough to allow them to do the things that a Catskill member would do. And that's the big thing. You just can't have every buff joining a program like this. You got to have good, qualified firefighters.
Is there a process where you can, hate to use the word weed some out, but have you ever had to deny somebody the opportunity to do it?
Never. No, what happened is the first year, I reached out to some people that didn't show up a lot or hadn't shown up at all, and you know, we parted ways mutually, the department and those members. Nothing against them, but we wanted people that are consistently riding with us, you know, three or four times a month. In the case with the two guys we got from Hudson, they run every run Monday through Friday during the work hours. So we picked up those two guys. But you got to have people that are committed to us. You know, we're committing to them. They need to commit to us. And if they can't, you know, no big deal. We just move on. But we want people that are committed to the program and ride. The more you ride with us, obviously the better we get, the more we learn each other. You know, to use the captain of the City Hudson, for example, me and him go in the building together, and it's like you don't even have to say nothing to him. He knows what he's got to do, whatever position he's got, the can, the irons, nozzle, whatever, and vice versa. And that's a very comforting feeling as an officer. And, you know, you have a guy with you with 15 years, and he's captain in a busy volunteer department, and now he's our asset. So that's
wow.
How we looked at it, and we had no issue with older members or any members with the program at all. I think
you didn't
everybody
get the, you
liked
can't
it.
Do that.
I have heard nothing bad about it from the members at all.
Wow.
And like I said, it's helped us a lot. The captain of Hudson actually drove mutual aid to his own fire with our tower.
No.
So it's a good program. It really, we have a resource. Why are we not tapping it? We have people right here in town from other fire departments that want to give time to our fire department. And
yeah.
Good guys, good girls, they train. Everything you want as a chief or captain, line officer in your department, these guys do. Can't say enough about them. I know our chief's happy with them, happy with the program. And I give him credit for allowing us to go with this because, you know, at first, you're worried about blowback and all that with a volunteer operation. You know, you're trying to keep 60 guys happy, and that never happens. But this is an issue where we never had any problems. Everybody accepted it.
Well, let me ask you this. So if I'm a member from another department and I have minimum requirements in that department, I have to go to so many drills. I may even have to go to meetings or details and things like that. For your ride-along program, do you now place additional minimum requirements on these members where they have to make so many calls or so many of your training? I imagine there's got to be some training because they have to learn the Catskill way of doing things and then continue to refresh on it. So how does that work? Are there minimum requirements, and do they train with you on a regular basis? Are they expected to be there?
We take it on a case-by-case basis because the spectrum of experience it varies. We have a few that are very new to firefighting, and then we have a few that are, you know, excellent firefighters. So we train with all the people that are on this program. We train with their departments out at the training center in the county once a year, twice a year. And then we'll go over to the Columbia County and train over there with them. And these members are in that department, so they get to work with us in the training field like that. So if somebody, you know, really we have limited experience riding with us, they'll be assigned a senior firefighter or an officer. We just don't let those people walk in the building, you know, I'm here, just walk around. So we do that. And, that's pretty much
but,
it with
but they're
that,
not
as
there
as training
with
most
you guys.
Most of the guys are seasoned vets. There's two. that don't have a lot of experience, but they're coming along really good.
Interesting. And you said if they're an officer in their home department, you've even had situations where they've taken over command because there were no Catskill officers.
Correct. That's true. Yes. I mean, why wouldn't we tap into that? We have trust in them, and we've worked with them. We know they can do the job. Why not let them fill in when we're not around, you know, when an officer's not around? You know, a guy with 15 years doing a lot of fires over in Hudson, you know, yeah, we trust him. We work with him. Yeah. We train with him. We trust him. And like I said, you know, he's an asset. You want to keep an asset. So utilize him. You know, an asset is something you utilize. Utilize to the most of his ability.
And how did you solve the issue that comes up any time we talk about new ideas that even remotely involve people? Insurance. How does that work? I'm sure somebody was worried about it.
Yeah. You need to have a letter from the chief of your home department stating your qualifications, your air pack qualified, your physical, what size of mask you wear, all the legal requirements and regulatory requirements have to be signed off by your home chief. And then our chief signs off on it. And now you're basically on mutual aid to us long term.
It falls under the mutual aid type plan. Gotcha.
Yeah. And every year we re-up with their home department to make sure they got all their training in and their physical and all the regulatory stuff so we're not, you know, caught with our pants down.
Does it affect their LOSAP? And for our listeners who wonder what I mean by that, that's Length of Service Award Program. It's a New York State program. Other states have it as well, where you can earn basically a retirement in the volunteer fire service, and you earn points in your home department by participating in calls and activities. And I would imagine that's completely separate, though, right? That has nothing to do with your department.
Correct. And I don't even know if any of them have it in their home department, to be honest with you.
Gotcha. So any negatives at all that you honestly have seen from a program like this? Anything at all? Has there been any hiccups, any issues? Has there been any egos getting in the way or someone maybe afraid to take an order from another officer, from another department? Anything at all? Or has it been – how many people still do it today? You had 12 to start with, and do you still
have
a good robust number?
Okay. We're down to four right now, and two of them make everything. When we first got going, I was worried about, you know, the egos and the pecking order because, you know, in the volunteer fire company, there's kind of like a pecking order, you know, who, you know, senior firefighters, you know, guys that drive all the time, you know, wondering if they were going to be bent out of shape, if they felt slighted or, you know, this guy took my spot. We've had none of that, none at all.
Oh, that's fantastic. Whose gear do they wear? Do they bring their gear or how does that work?
Give them Catskill gear. The captain of the City Hudson, he brings his own stuff. The rest of the guys wear Catskill gear.
And the captain,
the gear.
We got their pagers
program for Catskill. So
okay.
We do everything we can to accommodate them, just like a Catskill member.
And you mentioned this captain a lot, so I imagine he's working there in your town, and he's got the type of job where he's allowed to leave?
Yeah, we got two firemen from Hudson, the captain and a lieutenant now. And they both work for a car dealership in town, and they spring for everything. And it's great. Like I said, you're putting two experienced guys in that daytime lineup that we normally wouldn't have.
And they're leaving for any type of call? It's not just the serious working fire. It sounds like they're going out on pretty much anything, and that's how the program works, right? It's not just for the serious working fire. These people are used at even a routine fire alarm set off by burnt food type call?
They've done pump outs and they've done lift assist with EMS. So, I mean, they're making everything.
Wow. Well, they must really be into it, too, to be doing that at home and in your department. So, yeah, you're lucky to get some.
It adds so much, you know, having these ride-along guys. You know, as the chief officer, you know, normally during the daytime, you might have two crews you can get going before mutual aid shows up. Well, now we have a third crew. We got two, three guys riding in with us. It's a whole other team. They could be on the floor above. They could be on the roof. You know, it gives you more manpower on scene quicker instead of these guys waiting until Hudson got called or wherever they're from and then coming to the call.
Did anybody else, let me reverse it a little bit now, has anyone else done this with your members? In other words, if you had members working in other jurisdictions, have these programs been set up anywhere else as far as you know, or any of your members participating in another town that they work in?
I've had people reach out to me through email or through our county car, too, as a member of our fire department. And I provided them with the information that we have and what we've done. You know, this program probably isn't perfect, but it's going in the right direction. It solves issues. You know, it's outside the box, so to speak. I'm sure somewhere in the country there might be a program like this, but this is the only one I knew about at the time when we started it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely outside the box thinking, but I think we need to do that to survive in the volunteer fire service. And you know what it reminds me of a little bit is there's programs, and my own department has done this. I think it's called the Joint Service Agreement program, where we can take college students that are members of a department outside of our area but go to school in our area, and we can use them, the same type of deal. The chief has to okay it and get, you know, training records, make sure that the members meets minimum requirements, but then they can volunteer with us while going to college in our hometown. And same type of thinking there, and it bolsters the ranks with experienced firefighters. And I got to tell you, I know of two who have stayed in our area and stayed, and one of them still serves with us today. We hooked them to stay in our little Snyder Fire Department. And same type of thinking, I think. You know, it's the college side of things, though, but same idea. We call it the Joint Service Agreement.
Yeah, that's pretty popular in college towns. And, you know, obviously they're an asset, and you're taking advantage of the asset.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you definitely need to make sure that, you know, you got to set some minimum standards. You don't want to take maybe a brand new person that you have to now bring up to speed. So if you get to the experienced people, which it sounds like you are, wow, you know, that's an awesome program. Can't think of any reason why it can't be investigated and work for other people. You know,
yeah,
again,
we're very happy with it, and we're glad we started it.
And with recruitment and retention, there's a lot of new ideas out there, a lot of old ideas too. And in my opinion, and what I say on the show all the time, is consider everything. Again, I'm one of the older members of my department. I have to maintain an open mind. I said this line, it's gotten a lot of hits. People love what I said. It became a tagline at a conference I was at recently. But, you know, the volunteer fire service of the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s was great. It was fantastic. Everyone did a great job. It was filled with tremendous people. They probably saw more fire duty than we'll see that we see now, so much more. But those days are gone, and they're never coming back. But that doesn't mean the fire service today can't be as good. We just need to consider new ideas and maybe not hold on to the past and say we don't do that or that will never work. What do you have to lose by trying? And then if you fail, okay, it didn't work, right? That's the worst. If your program didn't work, what did you lose, right? It didn't work. Okay, we'll try something else.
Right. Don't be afraid to try something. Like you said,
right.
You know, you try it, it works great. Now it's something that's a benefit.
Oh. And our fire service, you know, volunteer fire service needs creative new ideas, and this is certainly one of them. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. Everybody, there was an article, and was that in Fire Engineering magazine in the not-too-distant past, right? And covered a synopsis of that whole program. It was in the June edition of Fire Engineering in the Volunteers Corner, if anyone would like to look that up. And it's titled, and I'm sure you could Google it, it'll come up, Ride Along Program in New York State. Great, great program. A lot of good information there, Chief. Thank you for sharing it with me. And I want to move on now and talk a little bit about leadership. That's another topic you've written about. And as I mentioned earlier, a topic that is discussed so much on podcasts, and there's so many books and webinars and things, and because it is so important, and it's important to discuss it and talk about some different angles and approaches and ideas. And you wrote an article about leadership and what successful leadership looks like in a volunteer fire department, and you mentioned several areas of concern that volunteers continually cite that their peers are lacking. And I was wondering if you could discuss those areas of communication and emotional intelligence, things like that, because in your research, these are things volunteers have brought to you that said their leaders are missing. Is that correct?
Correct. When you get out and about at seminars and stuff and you talk about, your department or, hey, how's this work over there, and you hear about officers they may or may not like, and you ask why, these are, things that always came up was communication, fire ground skills, and command concepts. Not a strong fire ground leader. They don't break up cliques or try to squash them, or they have huge egos, and, they put themselves first over the team. Now, the emotional intelligence, that's something, not a lot of people talk about, don't even know about it really, but I think that's really important because there's, 4 or 5 points on that you have to have, in my opinion, as a chief officer or a leader of the fire department, be successful.
What do you mean when you mention emotional intelligence? What are you talking about when you mention emotional intelligence?
Well, self-awareness. Are you self-aware how people perceive you? You could think you're doing a great job coming across with something, and you're not aware that you're not really doing a great job, or people perceive you a different way than you think they perceive you. Empathy. Do you understand when people are going through a tough time? Can you help them out? Can you point them in the right direction? You're going to be, hey, chief, the babysitter can't watch the kids. I'm going to miss drill night the next 3 or 4 weeks. Instead of giving the guy a hard time, it's like, hey, I get it. I understand. We all got families. That kind of stuff. Also, self-regulation and social skills. We all have officers or have had officers that don't have great social skills. They find it hard or difficult to, give orders or talk in group settings. But that's something that's very easy correctable. And self-regulation, not getting crazy or out of control, being able to keep yourself between the lines, so to speak. And like I said, this is something the fire service don't really talk about a lot. I could find very few articles when I wanted to research it. My boss at work is a retired colonel, so he's one that talks about this a lot, where I got this idea from, and it makes a lot of sense.
So how do you think they get that corrected? How do you think when someone maybe isn't the best with social skills or at giving orders, is it just train, read? What do you recommend?
Well, first you have to listen. You have to listen to somebody give you constructive criticism and accept it. 5 or 6 people are saying the same thing. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And you have to, you can either look inside yourself. You can look on the Internet for information to help you with these things. You can talk to a mentor or a trusted person. But if you want to change or you want to hit all these points, you can do it. It's just a matter of being motivated and determined to do it and seeking out, the right way. Like I said, mentoring, computer, therapy.
Yeah, when you get that badge handed to you or put on those new collar insignias, it doesn't always come with the skills that you need. You got to go out and seek it. But you also mentioned you got to ask, and I think that sometimes is a missing link. I think people are afraid to ask because it requires them to be humble, and they may not like what they hear. But if you go to 2 or 3 people and they're saying the same thing, it may be time to really focus on how you're doing things. And that is so important when you pin that new officer's badge on or want to be considered a leader in your volunteer fire department.
Correct. I used to ask Bill Rinaldi and Paul Overball, 2 guys have been in the fire service a long time. I would throw a text message to them every couple months, 2 guys that I really have a lot of respect for, and ask them, how am I doing? Department going in the right direction? How's the training? What do you guys think? Am I handling the chief job all right? Am I handling the assistant chief job all right? Captain, I get to see these guys every month because I sit on the board of directors with them, and so I have a lot more face-to-face communication with them. And, like you said, you got to be willing to take what they say.
Yeah, Yeah. You point out in your one article, you actually cite a fire company that you think just has it together when it comes to leadership. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because you had a lot of nice things to say about the Ulster Hose Company number 5.
Yeah, Ulster Hose, they really got their act together. Their chief is really, he's an amazing guy. He seems to have everything, you know, all the intangibles that, you know, you want in a person, gets along with his guys. When I went down there and talked to his officers and his guys, they couldn't say enough good things about him, about how he's open with communication. And I think a lot of that comes from he's secure with himself. You know, when you're an officer, you got to be secure. You got to know what you're doing. If you're one of these guys that's always worried about, is this guy talking about you going to do the right thing? You know, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure. But he's got a good grip on that fire department. The training is outstanding down there. One of their assistants is with the city of Kingston. I believe he does their training. And I was reading through some of the stuff they gave me, and it's just unbelievable how they have it set up. And the chiefs actually get dirty with the guys. There's no standing around BSing. You know, they're on the line or they're doing the maze or whatever they're doing for that night. They're working with the guys hands-on. And, you know, you lead by example. So they also, what gives them a little bit of an advantage is City of Kingston used to have a lot of volunteer fire departments. They closed them down, most of them, I believe. So some guys that live in the city actually went out there to volunteer. It was right next to City of Kingston. So they might have a little advantage as far as membership goes than most of us.
Yeah, they got a good group of 90 members, I believe, right?
They also specialize in dive team, SWAT, RIT, you know, going in and getting people that are, you know, shot in a hot zone and stuff like that. And they work with the Ulster County Sheriff's Office for both the dive team and this RIT team. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, just normal firefighting duties for a volunteer take a lot of training. And then you throw on dive team or any specialized team. To be good at it, you got to practice. And, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of practice and not many uses because, you know, you lack those runs. But these guys, I don't, you know, they motivate. Their chiefs motivate. And if you can't motivate, you can't lead. And I think
Sean
does a great job.
Yeah, that's a huge part of the volunteer side
that.
Of things. You've got to make people want to be there because they can easily choose to do other things, but you need to make them want to be at that work detail or be at that community event or be at that emergency call. So I'd agree with that. Motivation's huge. And you mentioned that Chief Sean Heppner there at Ulster Hose Company 5 talked to you about how they have a team approach. They just feel that everybody from the commissioners on through the officers to the newest members feel like they're a member of the team. How do they do that? What did the chief tell you about how they create that team atmosphere and no cliques?
Well, I think what helps him is he's got very supportive commissioners, he told me. So they have good funding. They take care of the members. You know, they got a coffee room, a computer room, a ready room. So, you know, you're getting a little bit of a benefit as a member. In the volunteer fire service, you know, our commodity is our guys. You have to take care of your people. You have to be able to motivate and inspire. And he worked the room like a politician. And I say that in a good way. You know, he could rib the guy with 40 years and he could rib the guy with 4 weeks, you know, bust their chops. And he worked the room and basically, you know, said something to everybody, make everybody feel wanted that was there or let them know that, hey, you know, I see you're here, even though he's got 90 guys. You know, you matter to me.
Yeah, yeah. And you talk about the communication, too, and I talked about that on this show before. You know, communication to me is one thing that should be an easy concept for new leaders and new officers to grasp, but it so often isn't. And this chief had it together. You mentioned that they're very good at communicating, and it's a two-way street. They goes up and down.
Correct. You know, he lets the officers funnel stuff up to him. You know, obviously he's the chief, and you know he'll make final decisions. But from what they say, he takes everything, and he thinks it over, mulls it over, and if you're right. You're right, and they'll do it. You know, as a young officer, you want to feel like you're part of the team. You know, a lot of people, oh, you're second lieutenant, you just shut up and do your thing and learn. Well, the guy might have a good idea. You know, encourage him. Even if you don't implement the idea, just the fact that you're listening to that young officer, letting him know that, hey, what you say matters. I, you know, I care. I want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. I think the wrong approach is, no, we'll never do it. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And tell me you've never heard that before. And what does that do? Certainly doesn't motivate that young officer, does it? And their next idea might be a really good idea. So you just demotivated them. Or the eye roll. How many times have you seen the eye roll when you're someone's presenting a new idea? And you cite this company, and this chief is having their act together and point out so well that the chief listens to everything that's brought to him. And people are encouraged to bring ideas, and they're all considered. And chief has to make a decision, and he may not accept every idea that comes his way, but at least he makes people feel comfortable bringing those ideas to him.
Yeah, I feel like in the volunteer fire service, we get too emotional with some decisions that the officers make or your board of directors, your fire commissioners. You know, we get too wrapped up in it, and you let that destroy morale. You know, you got to be able to let certain things roll off your back, and, you know, you pick the fights that you can win, and the fights you don't win, you say your piece, and then you respect the process. You know, you can't be going around, you know, undermining officers or members. It's just, you know, it's not good because we're not getting a paycheck. If people don't feel welcomed, if people don't feel like they're part of the team, you're not going to see them.
You know, one thing I always like to point out, anytime there's a decision that has to be made or new ideas are being considered, if the process is correct where it's a democracy and everyone is allowed to speak their piece and be respected with what they're saying, in other words, others are listening and contemplating what the other person's saying about whatever the new idea is or whatever the change is, whoever makes the ultimate decision, as long as they've allowed everyone to have their piece, then it could be a board's decision, it could be a chief's decision, whatever it is, the process was followed and followed correctly, and you have to live with the final decision. It's nothing personal. You know, we don't want to do it personally. Well, I'm not gonna like this idea because it's Tom's idea. It shouldn't be that way. As long as you don't do it personally and allow people to express their views, even if it's not the decision you want, you've got to accept it and move on. Like you said, roll off your back because the process was honored. It was done the way the boards were set up to do things and get things done. That's just how it is.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like that's what they're doing in Ulster Company number 5 there. And, you know, you hit a great line in that article, too. I highlighted it. Leadership can make or break a volunteer fire department. Every member needs to feel its leaders value and truly care about them, not just your A-team members, not just your members that maybe work for the local municipality and are able to go to all the calls during the day, but even that member that, you know what, his spouse or her spouse is working, they're maybe not making a ton of calls, maybe it's that babysitter problem that you just mentioned earlier. Respect all your members and form that team, and you'll have more success as a leader and officer in your department.
Yeah, and stay in touch, too. As captain, you know, I message guys every week that I don't see around, and I messaged one last week, and he's got an issue going on in family court, that type of thing, and he was looking for a lawyer, so I knew somebody that owed me a solid. So I messaged him, and then he said he would give the guy a call. You know, little things like that. And I'm not even, you know, there's a huge age difference between this guy and myself. But as captain, you know, I want him to know that I care about not only what goes on at the firehouse, but what's going on in his personal life. If your personal life is a mess, chances are the guy's not going to spend a lot of time volunteering.
Right.
So I reach out every Monday or Tuesday. I throw 3 or 4 messages to people I don't see. Just, you know, hey, how you doing? Miss you around the firehouse, you know. You're an asset. We want you as part of the team. Don't want to lose you. Stuff like that. You know, I work the roster and try to touch everybody by text that doesn't show up.
Yeah. Call having situational awareness, strong situational awareness. Yeah, it applies on the fire ground, but it applies in the firehouse too. And that's a great approach that you're taking there to stay connected with your members and show that you care. And you know what? Maybe when this guy gets his personal life back together, let's hope he does. It may take a while, could take a year or more, but maybe when he gets his life back together, you'll get a member back that's stronger and more dedicated than ever before, and he'll remember how you were there for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, as a reminder to our listeners, this is Fire Engineering's Blog Talk Radio, tonight's episode of the Professional Volunteer Fire Department. Tom Merrill here, glad to have you listening in with Chief Ed Dolan, Captain Ed Dolan, who's talking about our great volunteer fire service and a lot of issues that affect it. If anyone has questions or comments for Ed or myself, feel free to call in at 760-454-8852. And, Chief, I wanted to also... Yeah, we kidded around at the beginning before we went live about the controversial subject, but you're seeing a little bit more and more written about it. You wrote an article about it. Is it time to require chiefs pass some knowledge-based testing? Yeah, I would say most volunteer fire companies still operate the way they did 100 years ago, and they elect their chief officers. Maybe they elect their entire officer slate. My department still does it that way. You think it might be time for a change. Why don't you talk about that? It was a little controversial article you wrote there, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. We got hundreds of messages and people fighting back and forth on Facebook, you know, trying to make their opinions. So, yeah, I believe it's time. And everyone in my department, I have total confidence in three chiefs right now. So it's not based on anything that's going on in my department. I just want to put that out there. But we, you know, we all know departments where you scratch your head and say, really? That's the best you can do? You know, if you don't have an understanding of how fire travels in 2.5-story balloon frame, or you don't have an understanding what the dead load on this commercial building could do when the steel is weakened underneath it, you shouldn't be standing in the street giving orders. And I'm not talking, you know, I know guys say, oh, I'm not a good test taker. I'm not talking about reading the paragraph and picking out, you know, this or that. I'm talking about here's a diagram. You know, we all have things that we have to do at a fire. If it's New York City, Catskill, New York, or Lake Jackson, Texas, you have to ventilate. You have to search. You got to get a water supply. You got to get water on the fire. We all have to do that. We just do it in different ways depending on where we live and how we operate. So I know there's great minds out there to come up with some way to give a test or battery of tests. So this is my department, for example. We give it in October. Our election's in December. Seven guys pass whatever test we give. Seven guys can run for chief. So the department knows that the guy standing in the street, he can read smoke. He knows about burn time on different types of construction. Because when I'm in there as a captain with our guys, right now, I have confidence in my chief. He'll pull us out if he's seeing something. He's going to recognize the signs. That's not the case in a lot of volunteer fire departments.
So did you say that I missed what you did? There's a test that you give anyone that might run for chief? Is that your department that does that?
Oh, I was giving an example.
Okay, I thought so. Yeah, it's just an example, right? But I'd like to hear from anyone that does that.
You have a pool of candidates that, you know, understand the fire ground, how fire burns, you know, how different types of construction, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, Maydays, and, you know, we got to touch on Maydays and safety, scene safety, hazmat. You know, you incorporate a little bit of everything.
Awareness of your department's operations, too. Everyone has their unique customs and traditions and ways of doing things. And I think it's important for leadership to learn those and embrace those and keep them going as well.
Yeah, and I think sometimes in the volunteer fire service, we worry too much with administrative stuff and budgeting. You know, you can get help with that. The board of directors, the president, the commissioners, you know, that kind of stuff, you've got people to rely on. When you're standing in front of a building, you know, you don't have time to ask this guy this question or that guy this question. You have to react. You're making decisions that have to be done in rapid fire succession in order to have a safe, successful fire scene.
Yeah, and not everyone that raises their hand in the air maybe should be one to be considered. So And I've seen this, you know, I've seen this thought come out more and more in the last couple of years. It's definitely been the topic of, obviously you wrote about it, but I've heard about it from in other articles and heard maybe some podcast talk about it as well. And if anyone's having success doing that, we'd love to hear from you. And I'll give my contact information out at the end and you can share it with us. Because I think it is something to be considered going forward. And
I believe, the toughest requirements to be a chief in my county. I know I gave my SOPs to some people that work for me in different departments, and they're like, wow, you guys got a lot. But if the guy can pass the test and he has all the knowledge, you know, and he's got the basic firefighter and hazmat operations, if he can pass the test that's given to him, there you go. Put him in the pool of the candidates.
What can you?
You know,
would you mind covering some of the?
And sit there and get lectured to week after week after week and get a certificate.
Right.
But
right.
putting knowledge to use and putting the pieces of a puzzle together at a fire scene, you know, that's a different story.
Yeah. Would you mind sharing a few of your company's requirements, or that to make it to be a chief?
Sure. Got to have firefighter one. Engine company ops, ladder company ops, extrication. You know, they might call it different things now in New York State. You know,
well, that happens too. Yeah, I was going to ask you because I've run into that. I mean, I took EF in 1982, and now it's firefighter one. But you got to kind of be able to grandfather people based on what their classes were. Firefighter
correct.
Two, I believe, used to be intermediate. I took that. So yeah, I get what you're saying.
So yeah, engine company, truck company. Firefighter one, command course, hazmat course, extrication course, and then you have to be lieutenant, and then the captain for so many years. I think it's 2 years as captain or 1 year as captain. Then you can run for an assistant spot. And once you get to be an assistant, you know, once you're captain, you can run for chief or assistant chief. But the line officers, the lieutenants and the captain, you know, that's where you're proving yourself to the members because you work directly with the company. You know, around the firehouse, making sure things are ready to go. And at the fire scene, you're inside with them on a line or up on the roof or whatever your task is. So if you demonstrate those lower officer positions that you can do the job and then you get captain, and the way we operate, it's like a pay department, captain runs the house. He makes sure the team is ready for the chiefs. When they put us to work, you want the chief to stand out in the street and be confident that he's got trained firefighters going to go do what they're going to do. And that's important as a captain. So once you prove that, then we say, okay, now you can run for assistant chief or chief.
Chief, do you think it's a good requirement that your chief officers are all structurally certified?
Yes.
Because I know there's some companies that they don't even have to be structurally certified. And I just look at a mutual aid call. Yeah, okay, maybe you're not going into a house fire that you're commanding in your jurisdiction, but what if you go mutual aid somewhere and you pull up and the chief in charge of that incident says, hey, I need you to take your crew inside and do a search or whatever, and you're not structurally certified to go in? That could be a problem. Now, I understand some areas of the country, though, they're hurting for people. So it's one thing to put requirements down, like I just mentioned, be structural, but if you don't have the people, then you better come up with a plan B and figure out how you're going to fix that.
Well, you know, I think we forget at times that, you know, with the volunteer fire service, you're not pulling up with a complete command staff like FDNY or Cleveland or Houston. You know, there's not another battalion chief 3 minutes behind you. You might be the only officer on the scene. You know, you got to do a 360. You got to give the trucks assignments, let them know what's going on. You know, I usually call as captain on the radio, I'll call the chief and say, what floor is it on? You know, stuff like that. Get some information from him, even when he's doing his 360, so we can prepare and pull the right line, and we got the right tools and things like that. So, you know, you may be alone. You may be the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, for sure. All very good thoughts. The ride-along program and testing for chief officers, leadership development, all very important. You've certainly got a good grasp on those. You've written some great articles about it. You're obviously so well-versed in the volunteer fire service world. We've been going for about an hour here, And what I'd like to finish up on is your thoughts on where we can go as a volunteer fire service. What can we do to, use your term, slow the bleed in our volunteer fire service? We talked about, hey, embrace new ideas. Don't be afraid to try things. What's the worst that can happen? You can say, okay, that didn't work. Let's try something else, right? Officer and leadership development. If you're going to become an officer or want to be considered a leader in your organization, look in the mirror, ask people what you can do better, and work hard every day to make yourself a better officer, a better leader. And if you're moving up that chain even higher, you got to study, work hard. You should be reading something every day about this fire service world to make yourself a better fire service officer, especially as you move up the ranks. Get out and network, go to the trade shows, get the training. And Ed, what can we do? What else on top of that can we do to slow the bleed in our volunteer fire service? In your long experience, what do you think you can pass on to our listeners tonight?
First off, I think it's very important. Leaders must lead. The chiefs and the line officers, you're elected to lead. You're elected to fix problems. You're elected to make tough decisions. Anybody can hold those positions when everything is going good. It's what you do when things go bad or adversity's thrown in or there's a curveball at a fire scene or around the firehouse, how you intervene in an argument. Hold everybody the same accountability and expectations. So that's all good stuff for leaders. Everybody's got to have a team approach. You can't have people, you know, being selfish. You know, I want to drive all the time. You know, whatever their quirk is, it's got to be a team approach. Everybody has to communicate. The training officer, he's got to engage training at all levels. You know, guy with 30 years, and he's bended 70 roofs or 80 roofs, and he does it every time there's a fire. Challenge him at a training event. Challenge him. Make him do something else. You know, you got to engage that 30-year member like you engage the 30-month member. You got to have respect for everybody, and you have to show respect, especially the leaders. Public, when we're in public, you know, public perception, you can't have guys saying crazy things like, oh, I can't wait to get in there and break this or that, or whatever, you know, guys say or nonsense that comes out from time to time. Remember, you're in public. This is their worst day. You want to represent your department the best way you can. Every interaction counts, you know, whether you're interacting with guys in your department or you're interacting with the public. You know, when you go and help the public and you're interacting with them and you show compassion and you take care of their problem, you know, you might have a tough vote somewhere on a bond or whatever. You can go to those people and say, hey, we helped you out. We'd like some help. You know, it works both ways. Promote your department on social media. I mean, that's, you know, if you're under 40, everybody's on social media under 40 pretty much. Facebook, Instagram, that's how, you know, communication's done now, a lot of things. When you have disagreements in the meeting room, don't bring it outside the meeting room.
Amen, brother.
Business meeting.
Amen on that one. Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, bring it outside, talking to people, undercutting people after the meeting. Now, listen, leave blood on a table in the meeting room, but when you walk out, your brothers, you all live in the same town, you all get along, we don't cut each other down.
And you respect the process. That's why you have boards. That's why you have meetings. It's a democratic process.
Automatic alarms, you know, that's a big one for everybody, you know, in and out, in and out, in and out. You know, if you cut down on your automatic alarms, you'll see more people at calls, I believe. We have a reasonable expectation for automatic alarm. You know, some people run 3, 4, 5 trucks. You know, we run one and one engine in the tower or just the engine. If we get callbacks, you know, recently we had a nursing home where they called back and said they had a code red, which means actual fire. It was a little, small electrical fire, but, you know, they say code red, then we automatically bang a second set of tones, and now it's a full response. But we go to 200 automatic alarms a year. So, you know, one engine or a tower and an engine, you know, that's what a lot of paid departments are doing. So, you know, have reasonable expectations for your responses. You know, I've heard people say, oh, we only got 7 guys for this call or whatever. Hey, it was a car leaking gas. You don't need 30 guys and 4 trucks. You know, 3 guys on the engine is speedy dry. You know, have reasonable expectations of your department. if you're really busy, and this happens a lot outside of New York State, and I'm surprised when I go on vacation like Maine and Vermont, stuff like that, if they have 400 or 500 calls, they usually have a paid staff or one or two guys there. Or we still run volunteer in the state a lot with those kind of run numbers. But you might get busy enough where you got to put on a duty crew to take some of that burden off the daytime guys. If you have an issue, you handle the issue right away. If you're an officer, it'll get your respect. Two, you'll keep a snowball from turning into a blizzard. If you let things grow and grow and grow, something will happen, and it won't be a controlled situation. You know, we all know how things can get in the firehouse, especially when we're making, like I say, decisions and people are, like, emotionally involved in those decisions. E-learning. I wish New York State in particular would do more e-learning. I know we had 15 members join last year, and we ended up hiring a private company to come in and do our training because with people working shifts and babysitting and all that other things that go on in life, they couldn't do the state schools. So we partnered with West Athens up the road from us, and we held a private class for our two companies with state instructors that we paid. Now, they don't have a certificate from New York State, but they meet the qualifications, you know, of the authority having jurisdiction to train your people the way you want in New York State.
Was that for Firefighter 1?
Correct. Be an interior firefighter. Correct.
Can you? I don't want to interrupt you while you're giving all these great points. Can you just cover that again real quick? So you had members that were having trouble making the state Firefighter 1 class. So that's a great story. You guys said, okay, how can we help you? And what did you do?
We hired a private company that has actually retired state instructors and a retired, I think, deputy chief of OFPC. And they came and they trained us. They trained our guys to be interior firefighters, our 15 new people. But they work with us, you know, we're paying them. So they work with us on dates and times and getting people through the class. And the instructor and I would talk every week. You know, she would tell me, hey, this one's got to pick it up. This one's good. This one's whatever. And I would talk to the people. Hey, you got to get more on the ball with this or that. We can work with you or so-and-so can work with you, you know, try to support them. That's what we did. You know, we found it works for us. You know, the schools, you know, Tuesday night, Thursday night, maybe a Saturday all day. Well, here, they worked around our schedule. And, you know, maybe it might have went a little longer because of that, but we were able to get our people trained so we could,
wow,
you know, use them.
Fantastic. That's awesome.
The other thing I think with training is in New York State or any state is I join your fire department. Let me get on a computer and give me a battery of tests, you know, on the basics of firefighting and building construction. Hey, if I'm a carpenter, I might be able to tell you everything about this building and how fire can travel in it. You know, do I have to take a building course now? You know what I mean? Like a test that kind of rates you where you're coming in at, your ability wise, and then tailor a program for that person. I know, you know, I'm asking a lot here, but like I said, New York State's got a lot of smart people in it. I'm sure we can figure out something. You know, we're volunteers. We're not paying people to go to school. You know, they come out with, hey, how can we help you? Well, you got to be flexible with the training. That's our biggest killer is people say, oh, I can't do all that. I work shifts or I can't get a SWAT partner. You know, you got to think outside the box.
Yeah.
Or volunteer service is going to go down tubes.
Yeah. There you go. Back to what we said at the beginning of the show. Absolutely.
We've got to represent at the state level. You know John Farrell, chief of FASNY,
mm-hmm,
the head of FASNY,
mm-hmm,
president.
Mm-hmm.
He actually is in our next district up, and he's been doing that spot for 30 years, and he has the volunteer fire service on his mind 24/7, and he pushes for us. You know, he leaves blood on the table when he meets with politicians and stuff, you know. He is a great lobbyist for the fire department, for the volunteer fire department, a great voice. Everybody should make sure that their state organization has a voice like that that's truly representing you at the state level, because that's where most of your mandates come from. Put people in office that support your fire department or fire company. You know, I wouldn't get involved politically on Facebook with supporting people, but we all know who's running and would be beneficial for fire department, who's not. Support those people. Get your younger members registered to vote. We have so many members that weren't registered, and that's something I want to work on. Hear the term, it's always been like that. Yeah. I joked around in an article and say throw that member out, but don't let that prevent you from making a change or trying to improve something. With the fire service, you know, change comes hard sometimes. But once people see that it works, it's like anything else. After 3 or 4 months, you know, the buzz stops. 6, 8 months, now it's just routine. A year, you don't even hear about it no more. The list I did on the article started with leadership, and I ended it with leadership. You want leaders to lead. You want leaders to push the organization and the members as far as they can go. You've got to get the best out of your guy on the fire scene, and you should get the best out of your organization on the administrative side. Have leaders that want to push your fire department and you as firefighters. I want to be a better firefighter. I want my chief to push me. When I go to a fire call, I want him to trust whatever he gives me and my guys as assignment that he knows is going to get done, and he won't hear from me unless it won't get done and why it won't get done.
Yeah, yeah. All great points, Ed. Really, really good points. Not just slowing the bleed in the volunteer fire service, but as I read through the lines there, great points for how to make your volunteer fire department professional, because all of those definitely play into the professional equation. Thank you for sharing those. And quick question for you. You know, you mentioned just a few minutes ago that when you did the Firefighter 1 class by hiring out, you had 15 new members last year. That's impressive.
Yeah.
I don't think there's many departments that get 15 new members in a year.
I can't remember if I text messaged or I phone called the chief in Dutchess County from Wasaic. Mark Christensen's his name. And I was speaking with him because we were having problems getting some people through the door. It just seemed like we were in a rut. And he said, I got 20 new people in this year. I said, how the hell did you do that? He says, I talk to everybody about my fire company. Everywhere I go, I talk about it. I talk it up, you know, try to get them to see, you know, like what they could do to benefit us. And he said, I just talk. So, you know, I do a little bit of that, but we have a couple members that really are outgoing and talk. So not only do we talk to people to get them joined, but we go down to Music in the Park, which is every Thursday night, truck and 3 or 4 people. You know, let the kids get on the truck, talk to the parents. You know, we go do every ceremony going. You know, if there's a veteran that gets buried and you don't have no family, some guys from the fire department show up. You know, we're out there trying to be, you know, as caring to the public, but also on display for the public. Yeah, we just don't go to fire calls. We're here to support this veteran. We're here to support your kids down here. Come on over. Let's you know, let them sit in the truck, blow the air horn.
Yeah, you're embedded in the community.
Correct.
Awesome. Great points. Great points. I thank you for sharing all that great information tonight. And before we get off the air here, I talked to you earlier about the new segment I started a few months ago. I don't do it every show, but I had a great one for tonight. I ask any listeners that want to write in and have questions and are looking for some help or some guidance, I'll give you my contact information. Ed will give you his contact information at the end here. But one of our listeners from the South wrote me an email a couple months ago I'd like to read and see if we can help him out at all, Ed. This is from Trevor, and he's a volunteer firefighter down in the South. And he writes, I really enjoy listening to your show and all the great topics you dive into. It makes for great listening when I'm working my farm all day long. My question is, how do we get the members of my Valley Department to embrace the professional message that you sell? We are in a very rural area. We only run about 60 calls a year, mostly service-related. We haven't had a structure fire in our first two area in over 3 years. We do get called sometimes to help neighboring departments. Our members are really good guys, but to them, being a volunteer is almost like being in a club. It's a hobby. They really don't act like being professional applies to them at all. We train occasionally, but it's hard for them to believe that training is necessary on a regular basis because we don't go to all that many emergency calls. Any suggestions? Ed, what do you think? Can we help the brother Trevor out?
Yeah, I think I got a few points that might help. So he's not an officer, but you can go to the officers and ask, you know, do you mind if I do some training with three or four other guys? You know, if you have other guys that are like yourself, Trevor, that want to train more, a good chief or a good officer is not going to say no. So, you guys can do things on your own. You know, people in the department will see that. And eventually, I think they'd want to join in. Nobody wants to train to leave them at the station. So if you start something like that and it grows, not only are you showing people, you know, what you can do, but you're also improving your fire department. You know, you're improving the public's response because you're training people. Also, little things like giving T-shirts to everybody. You know, little things like that make everybody feel included. I get the feeling from his thing, his letter, he's not feeling the love, so to speak. But you can change that. But don't let anybody, you know, persuade you differently or knock you off your road. If you want to train and the chief says train and guys are complaining about it or riding you because, you know, they think it's a social club, keep your head down and keep going. Don't let nobody knock your determination off. If you're determined, you'll find a way. As far as the structure fire part, that's got to be, you know, that's going to be tough. You know, keeping.
Well, you know what I say?
Generating interest when you only have one structure every couple of years.
We had a great commissioner and chief of department in Buffalo, and he's on the national circuit. Perhaps you've heard of him, Mike Lombardo. Just a great,
yeah,
great
I just watched him the
man.
Other night on the.
On Getting Salty, right? Yeah, great man. He had a great line. I stole this line, and I think it's from him. So, Mike, I'm giving you credit for it if you're listening. He always used to say, you know what? The longer it's been since your last working fire, the closer you are to your next working fire. So my message is it could happen tonight. You never know. It doesn't matter that it's been 3 years. It could happen tonight. And whoever's having that fire is depending on you and your comrades to be prepared and be ready to help them in their time of need. And you know what, Trevor? You come from a small department. Embrace that. Be proud of the fact that you're rural and only run 60 calls a year. But make no mistake about it by letting people know that when they call you, whether it's for a fire or whether you're going on a mutual aid run, they are getting a top-notch department. Need not matter that you only ran 40 calls last year or 50 calls. What matters is that you're prepared and ready and professional and able to help them out. So celebrate it. Be proud of that. Be proud to only run 60 calls. You know, sometimes I wish we were only running 60 calls when I've gone on our fifth call of the day. But just be proud of it. And what the chief said, too, what Ed said, don't let anyone steal your passion. Don't let anyone steal your passion for what you do. And you're not an officer. Get like-minded individuals around you that like to train and like to make the department look sharp and get involved in the community and show them when you're wearing that nice T-shirt that you mentioned, Ed, show them that you are a professional outfit.
Tom, if I could just make one point.
Absolutely.
We're volunteers, so we have a response time to the station, most of us, because we respond from home. What we've been talking about as far as the training, you need to be on your game. We do not know when that victim's going to take their last breath or they can't be reversed. So be ready, trained, be ready on the truck with your equipment packed up, ready to go. I know clean concept cabs is a big thing. Me personally, I don't want to get out and take 6 or 8 seconds to put on a pack because somebody might have expired or take their last breath or they can't be reversed anymore by EMS. Be ready. The public counts on us, whether we're volunteer or we're paid. They're calling us because they count on us. We're going to make their day better. Whatever their situation is, fire department shows up, people let out a collective sigh. They're here. Now they expect you to perform. And if you're not trained, you're not going to perform.
Well said. Well said. And you know what? My paid job is at the alarm office, and there's not two different numbers to call, one for volunteer, one for paid. It's all one number, 911, and they say the same thing. I need help. They don't say send the paid firefighters or send the volunteers. It's I need help. Send me help. Be prepared, be ready, train hard, and be professional. Ed, I can't thank you enough for spending the hour and a half with me here tonight. I'm sure some of the listeners might have questions for you regarding your ride-along program, your ideas on leadership, and maybe even some questions that should be put into any questions that are asked of prospective chief officers, and your great list there for slowing the bleed in the volunteer fire service. If anyone wanted to reach out to you, sir, what's the best way to do it? How can they get a hold of you?
Email chiefed03@gmail.com.
chiefed03@gmail.com. Fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you so very, very much. It's nice to have you on. I know we've communicated a little bit about finding the time, and we finally had a show to get you on. It worked out with our schedule, so thank you. I really appreciate your time tonight and all this great information. I got three pages of notes, actually, from our conversation tonight. So thank you so very much, Chief.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
Absolutely. Look forward to catching up with you again, and stay in touch, brother.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much. So, again, a great show. A lot of great information there. You know, again, we talk about recruitment and getting new members all the time. Don't be afraid to try new ideas. As I said earlier, what's the worst that can happen? You say, well, that didn't work. Let's move on to something else. So, you know, that ride-along program is working well for them. I'm sure you have some questions about it. Feel free to reach out to Ed. A lot of great thoughts on leadership. And definitely a great idea there about slowing the bleed in the volunteer fire service with some great points there on things we can all do. So, folks, thanks again for listening in. I'd again like to thank Fire Engineering and Chief Bobby Halton and Clarion Events for supporting the podcast. Again, not just mine, but all the other great fire service podcasts that cover so many great topics regarding our volunteer and general and our whole fire service, actually. And I'm just so honored that I can be one of those podcasts. So thanks to Clarion Events, Fire Engineering, and Chief Halton for doing that. Again, if anyone would like to reach out to me, my personal email, tamerrill63@aol.com. It's tamerrill, M-E-R-R-I-L-L, 63@aol.com. Please check out any of my social media platforms, including my professional volunteer page on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and my YouTube channel where I have all of the podcasts since day one, about 5 years worth now, all in chronological order, and also some other cool videos on my YouTube channel, the Professional Volunteer Fire Department. And my website is coming. I'm slowly getting there. I am working with someone. I promise it'll be out soon. But hey, feel free to reach out to me via any of those other platforms. I'd love to hear from you. Like Trevor did, send me questions, comments, anything you might need help on, and we'll see if we can't get it on the show. Speaking of the show, my next show will be live from FDIC during the week of FDIC, August 2nd to the 7th. I hope I see you there. And then I'll be back on Tuesday, August 24th, which I think is going to be a pre-recorded show because I'm going to be up in the Adirondack Mountains on August 24th. So I think I'm going to pre-record a show for you, but I guarantee I'm going to have a great guest and a great topic. And as always, it's going to concern our great volunteer fire service. So thanks for tuning in tonight. And folks, please remember, your residents are owed professional service delivered by professional firefighters representing a professional organization. Take care, folks.